from behind those cold brick walls says, come here, boy, there ain't nothing for you.
Democratic Party, they want the UN to be strong. I attend all the Pete Seeger concerts, he sure gets me singing those songs. And I'll send all the money you ask for, but don't ask me to come on along. So love me, love me, love me.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. Supreme Court has handed a victory to low-wage workers. It refused to hear an appeal of a San Francisco U.S. court decision upholding Berkeley, California's living wage ordinance. Skates on the Bay, a non-union waterfront restaurant in Berkeley's marina, had challenged an extension of that law. Berkeley City Attorney Manuela Albuquerque says this is important for other cities around the nation that want to enact similar living wage ordinances.
The Ninth Circuit decision, which the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear, was a very thoughtful, scholarly opinion, and it established that social welfare legislation of this sort is to be treated with a great deal of deference in the courts.
The U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco said in its ruling that the city was entitled to extend its living wage ordinance to a particular area in order to ensure decent living standards for workers. Albuquerque says that's a win for labor.
Oh, absolutely, because it's protective labor legislation that we enacted for the benefit of workers.
More than 100 cities nationwide now have living wage ordinances.
The National Union for Boxers is asking President George W. Bush to grant a full pardon to the first black heavyweight champion of the world, Jack Johnson. The Joint Association of Boxers is asking for the pardon in recognition of both Martin Luther King Day and out of respect for the first African-American athlete to break through the color barrier. Johnson, who passed away in 1946, held the title from 1908 to 1915. During the time he defended his title, he battled many so-called great white hopes. One such victory over James J. Jeffries sparked race riots and led to some states banning the filming of his victories over white fighters. In 1912, Johnson was arrested for transporting his white fiancée across state lines under a law originally intended to combat prostitution. He was eventually sentenced to a year in prison, but fled the United States and continued fighting in other parts of the world. Eventually, he returned to the United States and served out his sentence. Many feel Johnson was convicted solely on prejudice, and the Boxers Union is seeking exoneration of the charges. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Want to know if your job is going to be cut? A recent survey of human resource executives reveals that the decision to cut a position is not as arbitrary as some may think. Tenure and job title are the prime factors in job cuts. However, 36% of companies do consider performance when looking to make that slice. The survey, conducted by the firm Lee Hecht Harrison, also says that 29% consider employees' skills.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Maybe you're one of the 2 million Americans who've recently had their jobs offshore into India, Pakistan, and elsewhere. Or one of the millions more expected to have your job shipped abroad in the next few years. If so, don't worry, bucko, for a new growth industry has arisen that offers exciting job opportunities for you discarded Americans. You, too, could become an American accent and culture trainer. It seems that while such corporations as Citibank, Dell, GE, and Microsoft are eager to abandon the U.S. and move their telephone service jobs to low-wage workers abroad, these English-speaking foreign workers are, well, foreign. So their accents and cultural references can be jarring to U.S. customers placing orders or seeking help. Thus, offshoring companies are hiring Americans to teach foreign replacement workers to sound and behave like Americans. Yes, this means you could end up teaching the Indian or Pakistani or Russian who was given your job how to sound like you. Courses in American Culture 101 include U.S. history memorization, American slang, basic sports knowledge, and pop culture. Quick, what's the Lone Star State? Who are the Florida Marlins? Can you name one talent that Britney Spears has? What's a burrito? The lesson plans for these courses include having to watch episodes of Friends and screening such films as Bruce Almighty. As for accents, there are voice exercises for Indians, for example, to help them lower their natural high-pitched and clipped pronunciation of English. And if the exercises are not enough, the corporate call centers use technology to filter the telephone voices of the foreign service reps, making them sound lower than they are. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, it won't be long before the corporations train low-paid foreigners to teach American accents and culture to foreign workers. Then there'll be no need for American workers at all.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Yes, and every time Rush Limbaugh hears that theme music, he ups his meds, I'll tell you. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome to our program, Tom Hartman Radio Program, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to West Virginia, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. In cable on cable TV systems of all things, 29 states, cable radio network, archives of White Rose Society, and at tomhartman.com. You can find topic-by-topic archives, as well as drop into our live chat room, which is already well-populated with some of the finest minds on the entire Internet. Just click live chat after you go to tomhartman.com. Welcome to our program. It is Friday. It is the first hour of our three-hour program, first hour of our Friday show, which means it's time for Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders, who I consider to be America's congressman in my mind, frankly, even though he is also my congressman here in Vermont. But Bernie's work just goes way beyond that. One of the founders, for example, the Progressive Caucus, he became the first independent congressman elected in over 40 years back in 1991. He's since been reelected 7 times, the longest-serving independent in the 220-some-odd-year history of the House of Representatives. Bernie Sanders, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Hey, Bernie, we've got some interesting statistics here out about what's going on with the economy. Let me just toss a couple of these out, and I'd like to get your take on what the meaning of this is. In this, as of last year, 92% of the 1.6 million Americans, which, by the way, is a number higher than any year during the Great Depression, not in percentage numbers, but in absolute numbers, 92% of the 1.6 million Americans who filed for bankruptcy were middle-class families. The cost of child care swelled to as much as 40% of middle-class family income last year. More than 40% of the 2.4 million newly uninsured Americans are middle-class. Average annual earnings for all Americans are down $1,400 last year compared to the year 2000 when George W. Bush won his election. Property taxes rose by an average of 2.8% in 2003 compared to a survey of 108 major U.S. cities. And according to a national survey conducted by the Consumer Federation of America, half of those surveyed with incomes between $25,000 and $75,000, the essential definition of middle class, are, quote, very worried about their financial condition. At the same time, we've got, you know, 3 years of so-called economic recovery. Workers' hourly wages are continuing to collapse. What's going on? Corporate profits are up. Everybody these millionaires and the newscasters are saying the economy's wonderful. What's going on?
Tom, you are raising the most important domestic issue facing this country. This is the issue that should be on the front pages of newspapers every day. It should be on television, and yet it is most often shunted off to the back pages of the business page. The bottom line, if you add everything that you are saying together, the bottom line is that the middle class in America is collapsing, period. The middle class in America is collapsing. What you didn't talk about, which is also true, is that technology is exploding. Worker productivity is up. Those are the good things. Right. And yet, despite that, people are working longer hours for lower wages. Their real inflation accounted for wages are declining. Poverty is increasing. And the gap between the rich and the poor and the rich and the middle class is going wider. It's not that we're in the midst of some terrible depression where no wealth or no income is being generated. It is that most of that wealth and most of that income is going to the people on top. And this is the dirty little secret of contemporary America that the corporate media doesn't talk about, that the president would never go near in a million years, and the too few Democrats are talking about, and that is the collapse of the middle class.
Yeah. Bernie, this last weekend, I was rereading a book that I read many, many years ago. In 1953, Russell Kirk wrote a book called The Conservative Mind. And it became the book that inspired William F. Buckley to become conservative, that inspired Barry Goldwater, that really created the modern conservative movement. And it's based mostly, probably 70% of it, is based on the writings of Alexander Hamilton, John Adams, and Sir Edmund Burke, mostly Edmund Burke. Burke, who said, "It does me no harm if a man has a profession as servile as a hairdresser or a tallow maker, candle maker, but it does society enormous harm if such a man is allowed to involve himself in governance." And Kirk, in his book, talks about how important it is. And again, this is the conservative worldview that is to this day held up as this is what we believe. I mean, this is the core foundation. How important it is that there be orders and classes in society. That if you want to have a stable social structure, you have to have a very, very rigid, wealthy elite and not a lot of social mobility. Whereas Thomas Jefferson was always talking about social mobility. He wanted the University of Virginia to be absolutely tuition-free so that anybody could become educated and join the middle class. Conservatives are pretty upfront about the fact that they're opposed to this, that they don't want social mobility, and if you know, you read the really serious stuff where the conservatives are talking to the conservative intellectuals, they're very clear about the idea, about the fact that destroying the middle class, destroying Social Security, destroying these protections is actually a good thing because it creates a society that's less unstable or more stable, that it can be more easily controlled by this meritocracy, this ruling elite. Do you hear conservatives in Congress talking about this kind of stuff? I mean,
no one talks about that out loud, at least not to me. But I think also what goes on, I remember, Tom, I was at a meeting last year, and we were talking about many of the same issues that you just raised about the collapse of the middle class, and people are working such long hours, and you know, people in this country are working two jobs, three jobs. They don't have any health care. And I was bemoaning the fact that more people are not coming out to meetings to fight back. And some guy raises his hand and he says, you know, Bernie, what do you want? People are exhausted. They're working 50 or 60 hours a week. So I think it is not just kind of an ideological bias that they want, our right-wing friends want a class structure with a few people on top making the decisions. When you destroy the middle class, when you don't give people economic security, when people are working so hard, in the United States, you know, our people are working the longest hours of any people in the industrialized world, people don't have the time to think about politics. They don't have the time to get involved and to go to meetings and to talk to their member of Congress.
Yeah.
And I think that is very clearly something that is not an accident as well.
And that was one of the points that Russell Kirk was making, was if you can do away with the middle class. He was Edmund Burke. He's got this whole chapter quoting Edmund Burke. Edmund Burke was writing in 1790, and he was all freaked out about the French Revolution, you know, the terrors that followed, you know, Robespierre and all this stuff. And he was saying basically that it came about because there was a middle class in France. If you don't have a middle class, if you simply have a class of terrified workers, I mean, Kirk's ideal was the Dickensian period, Dickensian, you know, Victorian England. If you don't have a middle class, but instead you have a terrified worker class, they are rendered politically impotent. They are incapable of participating in politics.
Because people are so desperate.
That's right.
They don't have to take anything that's thrown out to them, and they don't have the time or the capability or the economic basis to say, no, we want more. They're just struggling and hanging on by their fingertips.
That's right. And you know, and I talk about that on this program, for example, and I've had conservatives call me up and say that, you know, that I'm being a conspiracy nut because I'm saying that the conservative agenda is to eliminate the middle class.
By the way, conservative is too broad a word for me. I don't think all conservatives hold that point of view. I think you have right-wing ideologues. I think you have heads of large corporations. I think you have some decent people who are working hard to consider themselves to be conservatives. So I wouldn't lump all conservatives into that camp, Tom.
Mm, yeah, but I would say
you have some ideologues. Not a whole lot of people are, you know, intellectualizing about this. I think there are some people.
Yeah.
But let me tell you something. I know a whole lot of conservatives, a whole lot of small business people are working 60 or 70 hours a week. They can't afford health insurance. And they're not happy about that circumstance as well.
Yeah.
And to my mind, the antidote for all of this stuff is that in America, to the degree that we can, we start talking about this issue. And I want to pose again what I believe the $64 question is. Technology is exploding. Worker productivity is going up. That should mean that the average person is working fewer hours and making more money, not working longer hours and making less money. Why is the middle class collapsing? Why is the gap between the rich and the poor growing wider? What can we do to bring people together so that we turn that around and create a nation in which all people have a decent standard of living?
Yeah,
that, to me, is the political issue.
And the bottom line is that the answer to that rhetorical question is that it's because of political policy,
because of
policies made in Washington, D.C.
That's why.
It's not that the corporations are evil. It's that they're playing the rules by the rules of the game that are defined by our laws.
So here's what you have. I mean, picking up on the point that you made, this is how it plays out in the real world. In the real world, the heads of large corporations and their friends contribute zillions of dollars to the candidates of their choice, mostly right-wing Republicans.
And they're inaugural.
They lobby Congress day and night. The pharmaceutical industry, for example, has spent hundreds of millions of dollars in recent years making sure that Americans pay the highest prices in the world for their medicine. They are actively involved in the political process. Meanwhile, if you're a worker in America making $6 or $7 an hour, you're not going to be contributing huge sums of money to a presidential candidate. You're not going to be lobbying. You're not going to be going to meetings. You're working your butt off just to feed your family.
Yeah.
And that's increasingly the reality of America. We're moving in what I would call an oligarchy. People on the top, incredible wealth, incredible political power, incredible economic power. Poor people, no economic power, no political power. The middle class shrinking. people just working very hard to stay alive.
Right. And one of the things that sustains an oligarchy is the lack of inheritance taxes, for example. I mean, the inheritance taxes were progressive reforms that came out of the from the 1890s to the 1920s, 1930s.
Introduced by such radicals as Theodore Roosevelt.
There you go. Yeah. And advocated, actually, initially by Thomas Jefferson. And James Madison said, we need to have a tax that produces a leveling effect in America. Because these guys were so afraid, the founders were so afraid about the rise of another landed aristocracy in America that they that there could be such great wealth that they would take over the government. There are no dynasties left over from the founding families. They all go back to the 1890s.
But what is interesting to me, I want to just pick up on a point you made earlier, and that is our right-wing friends in corporate America. You turn on news, and the economy is growing. We're creating more jobs. I mean, I've been on national shows where people are saying the economy is booming. And what they are confusing are issues, facts like economic growth, with who is getting the money and what is happening to the ordinary person. I think when you look at the economy, the central and most important issue is what is happening to Mr. and Mrs. Average America.
Right. Yeah, we need
the story for those people is it ain't very good.
Yeah, we need to stop defining the economy as the stock market, because it's not.
Exactly.
The economy is us. It's Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. If you'd like to call in, our number 1-866-889-8894. Take calls right after this break. It's Tom Hartman here with you.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
get. Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider the Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You gave them the old, stay the course, I'm your man. Why, he'll flip-flop ya. He has no strength to lead. Yes, this you feared. Why, soldiers' jobs and surplus disappeared. Gave them the old, never yet devil speak. Yes, with folks swindled them. No one could hear the truth above the roar.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, America's independent congressman. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And first up, Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot, and please go with me. Hey, Bernie, we need to have Tom write a book and call it The Trick in Trickonomics.
There you go. What's your question, Armin?
Please go with me on this. Mike Malloy has said that both parties in Congress have lost their way. So the question I have, and then I have a comment after that. All during the destruction of the middle class in this country, how many members in Congress have lost their government-paid-for health care, pensions, and automatic pay raises?
Okay, good question. What do you think, Bernie?
Well, no members of Congress have lost their pensions, although that's an interesting issue. I've been involved in this issue of conversion of defined pension benefits to cash balance, and I proposed to Congress that they should do what they're forcing on American workers and lose 40 or 50% of their pensions benefits. Needless to say, not so many members of Congress agreed. I would just disagree, Armin. I don't think both parties have lost their way. I think the Republican Party is very, very disciplined. They know exactly where they're going. Their job is to represent the interests of large corporations and wealthy people, and they are doing it lockstep and very effectively. In terms of the Democratic Party, I think over a period of 40 or 50 years, that party certainly has lost its direction. I think it would be very hard to suggest that that party is the party of the working class or the middle class anymore. Having said that, there are some wonderful people that I work with day after day who are progressive Democrats who are knocking their brains out, protecting the middle class, but they are not a majority in the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Are you, just curious here, inside baseball, do you have an opinion that you would like to share with us about who should be heading up the DNC?
Not really. I think that I know some of the guys, especially the members of Congress. I think you need, and I think Dean is making the most sense on that, in that you really need a shakeup. You need to build a strong grassroots effort. It cannot be a party just to a significant degree. Both parties function as mechanisms to raise money.
Yeah.
And I think the direction has got to go toward a grassroots effort, millions of small contributions, and getting ordinary people involved in the political process.
Yeah.
I think Dean is saying that more than the other guys,
yeah,
but I'm not involved, not being a Democrat.
Yeah, and he did it well. Thank you. And thanks, Armin, for the call. Ken in Minnesota is on the line. Hey, Ken, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is my favorite hour of the week of your show, Tom. Thank you for being there, Congressman.
Thank you, Ken.
Wondering where the opposition is, and I think you probably already answered the question. What would happen if just every Democrat just voted against everything the Republicans put forward? I know we'd lose because we're the minority, but just think of the statement it would make. It would have to be covered in the news.
The way the Republicans 100% unanimously voted against Bill Clinton's economic package that brought peace and prosperity?
Exactly. Why
yeah.
can't Why can't we have that kind of solidarity?
What are your thoughts
well,
on that?
Well, I think, Ken, you're asking an important question. And I think what people have got to do is make sure their members of Congress, not just Democrats, but Republicans, hear from them. You know, I've made this point before. Your member of Congress, your United States Senator, is in the phone book. You have every right in the world not just to call up and leave a message. You have a right to make an appointment, bring in some friends. You may or may not get to meet with the congressman, but you'll meet with staff people. Explain to those people, and hopefully the member of Congress, what your concerns are. What bothers me very much is, as a nation, we got hung up in guns and abortion and everything else. We are not talking about economic issues. So my suggestion is let your voice be known that you don't want to see the middle class destroyed in America.
Amen. And contact your members of Congress. Well
said. Absolutely. Let them hear from you.
1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers in their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. Supreme Court has handed a victory to low-wage workers. It refused to hear an appeal of a San Francisco U.S. court decision upholding Berkeley, California's living wage ordinance. Skates on the Bay, a non-union waterfront restaurant in Berkeley's marina, had challenged an extension of that law. Berkeley City Attorney Manuela Albuquerque says this is important for other cities around the nation that want to enact similar living wage ordinances.
The Ninth Circuit decision, which the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear, was a very thoughtful, scholarly opinion, and it established that social welfare legislation of this sort is to be treated with a great deal of deference in the courts.
The U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco said in its ruling that the city was entitled to extend its living wage ordinance to a particular area in order to ensure decent living standards for workers. Albuquerque says that's a win for labor.
Oh, absolutely, because it's protective labor legislation that we enacted for the benefit of workers.
More than 100 cities nationwide now have living wage ordinances.
The National Union for Boxers is asking President George W. Bush to grant a full pardon to the first black heavyweight champion of the world, Jack Johnson. The Joint Association of Boxers is asking for the pardon in recognition of both Martin Luther King Day and out of respect for the first African-American athlete to break through the color barrier. Johnson, who passed away in 1946, held the title from 1908 to 1915. During the time he defended his title, he battled many so-called great white hopes. One such victory over James J. Jeffries sparked race riots and led to some states banning the filming of his victories over white fighters. In 1912, Johnson was arrested for transporting his white fiancée across state lines under a law originally intended to combat prostitution. He was eventually sentenced to a year in prison, but fled the United States and continued fighting in other parts of the world. Eventually, he returned to the United States and served out his sentence. Many feel Johnson was convicted solely on prejudice, and the Boxers Union is seeking exoneration of the charges. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Want to know if your job is going to be cut? A recent survey of human resource executives reveals that the decision to cut a position is not as arbitrary as some may think. Tenure and job title are the prime factors in job cuts. However, 36% of companies do consider performance when looking to make that slice. The survey, conducted by the firm Lee Hecht Harrison, also says that 29% consider employees' skills.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
There's no easy walk to freedom. No easy walk to freedom. Keep on walking and you shall be free. That's how we're gonna make history.
And welcome back. An appropriate song. I think this is probably originally a labor song. I may be wrong, but this is the weekend that we celebrate Martin Luther King Day, so it'll be on Monday. We'll get into that on Monday. But anyhow, welcome back. It's 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the Brunch with Bernie segment of our program. Congressman Bernie Sanders on with us. And Bernie, in our chat room, we have people from literally from all over the world come in and participate in a live conversation on the Internet while we're on the air. And I know we have, in fact, we've had as many as 97 countries logged in. And Robert Topp, I'm not sure what country he's in. I know Sue is in England. He says, Tom, can you ask the congressman why in the world you Americans don't want to understand that a universal health care system would reduce the cost of health for everybody? Besides, it's immoral not to help the other. Thanks. So toss that out to you.
Well, the gentleman is absolutely right in both instances. It is, you know, we talk a lot about morality today in politics. What can we say when you have a child who does not have any health insurance, is unable to go to the doctor in the year 2005? That is grossly immoral. And the gentleman is also right, because what we see in America today is an enormous amount of cost shifting and bureaucracy within our healthcare system, so that when people get sick, they end up in the emergency room, which is A, expensive. That cost is then shifted onto people who have health insurance, or in some cases to the state, and it's a total mess. The fact of the matter is, as I think the chatter indicates, we spend in the United States twice as much per person on health care as in any other country, and yet we have 45 million Americans without any health insurance. It is a system which is disintegrating, it is immoral, and it is highly irrational from a cost-effective point of view.
Yeah. Robert says, by the way, he's an Italian citizen. Just mentioned on the... Well, let's go back to the telephone lines. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Alan in Alabama is on the line. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
Yes, in the past, when we had a thriving middle class, did we also at the same time have a thriving stock market?
Yes, we did.
Well, that's nice.
I mean, that's my recollection. Isn't it yours, Bernie?
Yeah, it is. It is. And that's great. What we're looking at is a fairly stagnant stock market now and a declining middle class. But I don't think that the...
But the rich are getting richer.
I'm sorry?
I said, but the rich are getting richer.
Right.
Pardon my interruption, but I couldn't resist it. I'm sorry. You were going to make a point.
Well, I don't think that the stock market per se is what makes the middle class wealthy. I think there are other factors, and the stock market is one part of it. But I think clearly what we're seeing now is as a result of our trade policies, which I would finger as one of the major reasons why the middle class is declining. We are losing millions of decent-paying jobs. There is a prediction after prediction that in the next 20 years, China will become the major economic power in the world, and corporate America is certainly making that happen by moving to China as fast as they possibly can and throwing Americans out on the street who used to have decent-paying jobs. And what I worry about, Tom, is not just the loss of blue-collar jobs. I'm worried about the loss of information technology jobs to China and India as well.
Yeah, we've seen, 2.9, I believe it is, million manufacturing jobs during the Bush administration. And, of course, this isn't just his fault. This is something that goes back to Ronald Reagan really started this stampede, Bill Clinton signing NAFTA and GATT. But I think the Democrats and Republicans can take equal credit for it, frankly. But all these manufacturing jobs, and now also we're seeing all these information technology jobs, and now they're not just going to India, they're starting to go to China. China now has, you know, one of the fastest growing areas of education is teaching people how to speak American English so that they can compete with India.
And they're heavy into engineering, graduating many engineering students as well.
Yeah, and one of the things in many of the countries, the advanced Western democracies with whom we're competing, is companies are looking at us and they're looking at them and they're going, well, I've got to pay for health insurance for an American,
right.
Whereas a German company doesn't have to pay for health insurance. And so anyway, let's go back to the phone here. Tony in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Tony, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. I have a question for the congressman about the national health care program.
Yep.
Would any additional costs, if like we did switch over that, would they have been covered by, let's say, $1.7 trillion? Like the tax cut he gave to the rich?
Well, what you would do, Tony, is we are spending now 15%, I think, of our gross national economy on health care. We're over $1 trillion. And I think you're absolutely right in saying that instead of giving huge amounts of money in tax breaks to the very wealthiest people, that is one of the sources that we could look to fund a national health care program. But what national health care is about is saying people no longer have to pay for private health insurance. Will they be paying more in taxes? Sure, they might. But they're not going to be paying private health insurance. And at the end of the day, they're going to get comprehensive, universal health care for a lot less per person than they're spending right now. But you're absolutely right. Instead of giving hundreds of billions of dollars a year in tax breaks to the richest 1%, that money should go into a national health care program.
Yeah, expand. What if we just made Medicare, and thanks for the call, Tony, by the way. What if we just made Medicare universal? I mean,
One of the ideas that people are talking about. Is kind of another name for a single payer system.
Right. We would then have a system somewhat like the German system. It would be very different from the. If we made the Veterans Administration universal, then we'd have a system more like the British system, where the government actually owns the hospitals. I think most Americans are not in favor of that. I'm personally not.
You're making the distinction, which sometimes is not made, between a government insurance program,
right,
which is what Medicare is, and a government delivery of health care, which is what the VA and the British system is.
Right, and I think the vast majority of Americans don't realize that there's a difference between the two, number one. Different countries implement it in different ways, number two. And that number three, we already have both of them right here in the United States.
That's right.
and we can learn from our own lessons. We don't have to look at anybody else's. Let's go to Bill in Michigan, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
How you doing, Tom? A first-time caller. I really enjoy your program.
Well, thank you. Thanks for calling.
Okay, I got a question about Social Security. Okay, as America has lost jobs and the good-paying jobs, and now those jobs are being replaced with low-paying jobs, will that have an effect on Social Security where you don't have as much money going into the system and you don't have as many workers?
Well, that's a good point. And it also means, because wages for workers will be lower, that their benefits will be lower as well. That's a good point, Bill. But let me say this about Social Security, because it's going to be probably the major issue debated in Congress. Let me be very clear about this. You can argue a lot about Social Security, and honest people have different points of view. But what is absolutely a lie, absolutely not true, is for anyone to say that Social Security is in crisis or Social Security is going bankrupt. It is not. That is not true. Social Security today has enough money in it to make sure that we can pay out every benefit owed to every eligible American, depending upon the study that you look at, from between 40 or 50 years. It is not going bankrupt, and with some minimal changes, like doing away with the ceiling right now so wealthier people would contribute more into the Social Security system, you could have it going for decades longer. I strongly oppose the privatization of Social Security. I think that will be a disaster, and I'm going to do everything I can to stop the president from being successful in that effort.
Yeah. Thanks, Bill, for the call.
Hey, thanks a lot, Tom, for taking my call.
Okay, Bill, thank you.
Good to hear from you. And Bernie, isn't this just the nose under the camel's tent? I mean, these right-wing radicals have made it pretty clear that they think that both Medicare and Social Security are socialism left over from the Roosevelt era, and they're going to undo it. I mean, these are the beginnings of the destruction of these programs, aren't they?
That's right. Let's be very clear what this whole thing is about and what Bush and his friends are about. For decades, the struggle in America was for guaranteed rights for minorities, for women, for workers, for those of us who have to breathe the air and eat food and we don't want to see it polluted or unhealthy. Guaranteed rights established by the United States government. These people, Bush and his friends, who are essentially controlled by corporate America, want to do away with all of those guarantees. They want to put power into the hands of corporate America. So you destroy Social Security. People that are investing in the stock market, Wall Street will make billions in commissions. Stock market goes down. Guess what happens? People retire with very, very little money.
Yeah.
So you're right. This, the attack on Social Security is part and parcel of the attack on Medicare, Medicaid, public education. They even want to privatize large parts of the United States military. I mean, that's how far they want
to. Well, they've already done it. The second largest army in Iraq right now is private contractors, quote unquote, mercenaries, paid for by our tax dollars to the tune of $150,000 a year annual salary. It's one of the most expensive armies in Iraq. But we're paying Halliburton and they're hiring private contractors to do things
that's exactly the army should be doing.
I mean, it's incredible. And it's worth noting, I think, that the Social Security Act, when it was passed back in the 1930s, I forget the year, what was it 37, 36?
Around that.
Yeah. Not one single Republican voted in favor of that. They have been fighting this ever tooth and nail ever since. And, well, anyway, I'm on a rant. Let's go back to the phones here. Mike in Florida is on the line. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and thank you, Congressman. Recently, I just lost a mother to cancer after a five-year battle, and I think, like with most people, you never appreciate how many people are affected by some type of serious illness in a family or a good friend. And through that process, literally any money or assets she had were just wasted away through medical expenses. What is it going to take to finally bring this issue to the forefront and have something done about it? Because virtually anyone I talk to all view health care to be a problem, but yet the Republicans have done nothing but demonize the idea as being nationalized or socialized medicine.
This is really, Bernie, and another, what Mike illustrates, is another and really larger dimension of the whole healthcare crisis. And that, the same thing happened with my wife's grandmother, that there's this huge transfer of wealth, of accumulated wealth, from the middle-class elderly in America to the very powerful and wealthy pharmaceutical and medical corporations. Basically, you know, it's we're wiping these folks out in order to provide for their old age.
Now, Mike said it. Mike said it extremely well, and it is happening to millions of families. Tom, you know, I think still the largest single cause of personal bankruptcy in America is the inability to pay medical bills.
More than 50% of all bankruptcies.
Right, and old folks who then go to nursing homes have to, if they're going to get Medicaid, have to spend down their life savings, and on it goes. I think what we have to understand when we talk about health care is that this is not a medical issue. It is 100% a political issue, and that there are very powerful vested interests, such as the insurance companies, such as the drug companies, who see disease as an opportunity to make huge sums of money. That's what it's about for them. And what we have got to do, and more people have got to speak up on this issue, just as Mike so articulately did. There are millions of people who are in the same boat, people who are spending out their last remaining few bucks on health care for their parents or whatnot. You have working people who are just can't afford to go to the doctor. This is a crisis of a disintegrating system. We are the only nation in the industrialized world that does not guarantee health care to all people. The systems, as you indicated earlier, Tom, are different. They're different in Japan than they are in Germany, than they are in Canada. We can pick the best system. But at the end of the day, given the fact that we're now spending twice as much per person on health care as any other nation, we can have the best health care system in the world, guaranteeing health care to all Americans. And it's a political issue. And we've got to stand up to the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies and those people who are on their payroll and say the time has come that we junk the current non-system and move to a national health care system.
Yeah, every day in America on average, this is from William Christoph's column, Healthcare Ask Cuba. Every day on average, 77 babies die in the United States and one woman dies in childbirth. If we had a rate as good as Singapore's, we would save 18,900 babies a year. I mean, that's the real pro-life issue.
Well, that's right. And that was an interesting article that Christoph wrote in the New York Times. Here it is, folks. Cuba now, Cuba, a poor country, now has a lower infant mortality rate than the United States of America. And what was even more incredible is that Beijing in China has a lower infant mortality rate than New York City.
Yeah.
Think about that. Yeah.
It's mind-boggling. 1-866-889-8894. Shane in New York is on the line. Hey, Shane, welcome to the program.
How are you doing? I have a question or maybe a recommendation. What if we did something like made a national health care plan so companies could, well, the government controlled the health care and the companies wouldn't have to pay for their employees to have health care? Wouldn't that make it more money? I mean, obviously taxes might be raised for corporations in the middle class, but wouldn't that eventually make more money for corporations?
Shane, that is a very, very good point. And it's a point that many large companies are beginning to understand. If you look at a company like General Motors, if my memory is correct, they put more money into health care and prescription drugs than they do into steel.
Right.
And it makes them less competitive with Canada and other countries that have a national health care program. So you are beginning to see a shift within the business community just on that point, that as health care costs soar, these guys are spending a huge part of their profits providing health care rather than doing the stuff they're in business to do.
Yeah.
Shane's point is a very good one.
Makes perfect sense. And it is amazing when you think about it that there's more health care cost in the average car than there is steel cost. And the car is mostly, it's amazing. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman. It's the Brunch with Bernie segment on the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-889-8894. We'll be right back.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio.
In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxon Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Heard newborn babies wailing like a moaning dove. And old men with broken teeth stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman Program, Brunch with Bernie, our regular first hour of our Friday segment. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Elaine in Eureka, California on the line. Hey Elaine.
Yes, Tom. You're talking about medical care.
Yes.
I think one of the prime things that keeps it so high is a good example is right here in Eureka. The head of our one and only hospital for the Sisters of Orange makes over $4 million a year. And I think that's disgusting.
Wow, that's incredible. Elaine, thank you for sharing that.
Elaine is right. It's not only the heads of hospitals, it's the heads of insurance companies, the heads of HMOs, who in many instances are pulling in huge, huge salaries.
Yeah, it's the Bill Frist syndrome. Let's go to Chuck in Ohio. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, how's it going?
Great, what's up?
Oh, I can't believe I got through.
You are live and on the air, and we've got about a minute left.
I'll tell you what. I was taking a close listen to what the congressman was saying and everything. And if you went to a nationalized health care system, it also opens up a door, I think, for employers and employees alike, because I know there's cases where people are taking lesser-paying jobs because they feel that the benefits are better to serve, at particular.
That's exactly
companies.
Right, Chuck.
Yeah.
Chuck is touching on another issue. Huge numbers of people are going to a certain job, staying at a job, not necessarily because that's what they want to do, but because that's where they can get health insurance for themselves and their families.
So it's creating market dislocations.
Absolutely.
Weirdnesses.
Very important point.
Weirdnesses in the market. Our last call here, Martha in Massachusetts. Hey, Martha.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. We're down to about 30 seconds here.
Okay. Bernie, if... the president gets voted down, his plan for Social Security. Do you think there's a chance that he would automatically just cut benefits in half and say,
no.
Well, that's what happened because I told you.
Nope, can't happen.
No?
It won't happen. That will not happen.
Okay, good.
You're not going to let it happen, right, Bernie?
We've got to beat this proposal, and we got to strengthen Social Security, increase benefits. We can do that.
Yeah, there you go. Well said. Congressman Bernie saying, hey, Bernie, if you can hang on the phone for just a minute, I'd appreciate
sure.
it if you can. And thank you very much. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. It's our regular Friday session. Congressman Bernie, Brunch with Bernie, are the first hour of our program. The second, third hour of our program, repent, neoconservatives, for the day of reckoning is nigh. What is going on with neocons in this administration? We're going to get into that. In the next hour, plus we have our best of the rest of the news segment with a couple of the new media editors. We'll share more with you about that as time goes on. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where being progressive never felt so good.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. Supreme Court has handed a victory to low-wage workers. It refused to hear an appeal of a San Francisco U.S. court decision upholding Berkeley, California's living wage ordinance. Skates on the Bay, a non-union waterfront restaurant in Berkeley's Marina, had challenged an extension of that law. Berkeley City Attorney Manuela Albuquerque says this is important for other cities around the nation that want to enact similar living wage ordinances.
The Ninth Circuit decision, which the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear, was a very thoughtful, scholarly opinion, and it established that social welfare legislation of this sort is to be treated with a great deal of deference in the courts.
The U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco said in its ruling that the city was entitled to extend its living wage ordinance to a particular area in order to ensure decent living standards for workers. Albuquerque says that's a win for labor.
Oh, absolutely, because it's protective labor legislation that we enact for the benefit of workers.
More than 100 cities nationwide now have living wage ordinances.
The National Union for Boxers is asking President George W. Bush to grant a full pardon to the first black heavyweight champion of the world, Jack Johnson. The Joint Association of Boxers is asking for the pardon in recognition of both Martin Luther King Day and out of respect for the first African-American athlete to break through the color barrier. Johnson, who passed away in 1946, held the title from 1908 to 1915. During the time he defended his title, he battled many so-called great white hopes. One such victory over James J. Jeffries sparked race riots and led to some states banning the filming of his victories over white fighters. In 1912, Johnson was arrested for transporting his white fiancée across state lines under a law originally intended to combat prostitution. He was eventually sentenced to a year in prison, but fled the United States and continued fighting in other parts of the world. Eventually, he returned to the United States and served out his sentence. Many feel Johnson was convicted solely on prejudice, and the Boxers Union is seeking exoneration of the charges. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Want to know if your job is going to be cut? A recent survey of human resource executives reveals that the decision to cut a position is not as arbitrary as some may think. Tenure and job title are the prime factors in job cuts. However, 36% of companies do consider performance when looking to make that slice. The survey, conducted by the firm Lee Hecht Harrison, also says that 29% consider employees' skills.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Gosh, there's never a flamethrower handy when you need one. It's bad enough that food scientists have used genetic manipulation to create dangerous Frankenfoods, but now they've definitely gone too far. They're messing with Mexican food. I bring you two alarming examples from the laboratories at Texas A&M University. First, a scientist there has devoted himself and untold wads of our tax dollars to produce this stunning technological advance. A low-heat habanero pepper. Yoo-hoo, Professor. The whole idea of the habanero is that it is hot. Way too hot for my taste. But others are gluttons for heat, so the habanero is their gold standard of what a pepper should be. But, cries the professor, with our new meek habanero, all the people who shy away from the heat can now eat one. Yoo-hoo again. There are hundreds of varieties of peppers, all with varying degrees of hot. You want meek? Eat a pimento. But this pepper guy looks sane next to his madcap colleague at A&M who has been doing busy work with another Mexican food staple, the humble tortilla. Tortillas are the essence of simplicity, and it's best to eat them fresh, though they'll naturally stay fresh for a few days. But this is not good enough for the food science crowd or for the big corporate distributors that are hoping to lock up the national market. So for the past 3 years, this lab smock has had his mind, and more of our tax money, at work on the development of a flour tortilla that he claims will stay fresh without refrigeration for more than a month. And he's not stopping there. He's now collaborating with Iowa State Food Mechanics to produce fresh tortillas that will last, get this, 4 years. This is Jim Hightower saying, do we need any of this? How many people are sitting at their kitchen table in the morning thinking, what America really needs is a non-hot habanero and a tortilla that'll last 4 years?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman program, where liberals fiendishly plot for total world domination. Well, for a voice? For participation? No, we're going to go for world domination. Let's stay with it. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com, the website, if you want to drop in to our live chat room. Just click live chat. It'll take you over to the message board. Register there. You can read any of the 40 or 50,000 messages and participate in those conversations. And you'll find the link there into our chat room, where it just takes a moment to control-click on the register button and pick your name and password, and you're off to the races. We do not, by the way, sell lease, rent, or anything else, emails, addresses, and that sort of thing. It's all
Our chat room, our message board is not a commercial enterprise. It's just for this show. It's so you have absolute privacy and, well, I mean, privacy in as much as we're not going to, you know what I mean. Anyhow, winter in Michigan, and this could just as easily be anywhere else in the country. I'm seeing these same kinds of stories here in Vermont. This particular one from Clinton Township, Michigan, from WOD-TV. Winter in Michigan means some families could see their heat shut off if they can't pay their bills. This year, the danger is spreading to a new group, laid-off middle-class workers. Kathy Walgren of the Heat and Warmth Fund, or THAW, says she has seen an increasing number of cases involving people who have lost comfortable paychecks. Layoffs are becoming more common at white-collar work sites, and prices for natural gas and propane fuel are rising. I would submit that oil is as well. Clinton Town and electricity ain't far behind. Clinton Township resident Stacy Stairs and her three young children went without heat for most of December. Stairs earned $40,000 a year at EDS before she was laid off recently. Her overdue gas bill of about $900 was paid by THAW and other charities. Now her heat is back on. That's a good thing. But this is a symptom of what is growing across America. Growing across America. Now, here's where it gets really bizarre. We've established, I think, that the right-wing agenda is to place corporations in control of virtually every dimension of our lives. They have all of our credit information. They make decisions about whether or not we can buy a house. They make decisions about whether or not we can, you know, buy a car or have car insurance. They make decisions about what kind of work we're going to do. They make decisions about whether or not we'll have health care or benefits or pensions. Place all of the decisions, all of the freedoms of Americans in the hands of a small number of very large and powerful corporations, multinational corporations. And, of course, those opposing this, small businesses, entrepreneurs, medium-sized businesses, American-based businesses, are called liberals, right? It's amazing. It's just amazing, isn't it? Anyhow, here's the agenda, right? And nobody's making any secrets about this. I mean, this is not some great big mystery, right? Here now, Helen Johnson. You've probably never heard of Helen Johnson. This is an Associated Press story. Norma Love wrote this story about a woman in New Hampshire. Helen Johnson's a retired pediatrician. She used to be a child doctor, a kid doctor, 80 years old. And she had bought an insurance policy with the Providence Mutual Fire Insurance Company. And they have just pulled her coverage. Now, why have they pulled her coverage? Is it because she's 80 years old? No! They pulled her coverage because she is a Democrat and involved in local politics in Francistown, New Hampshire. I am not making this up. I'll read it to you straight. Here it is, straight off the AP wire service. Helen Johnson is an 80-year-old retired pediatrician who hardly considers herself of a risk for being sued. That's not how her insurance company sees it, however. Johnson is losing extra coverage she bought years ago while she was still practicing medicine, not because she's a retired doctor, but because she's active in Francistown politics. The Providence Mutual Fire Insurance Company sent her a letter last month notifying her that it is not renewing her $1 million umbrella policy next month because of, quote, the political positions the insured holds, end quote. Now, dumbfounded by this, the Associated Press called the insurance company. They got a hold of Dale Groves, vice president for underwriting at the Providence, Rhode Island Company, and he said, quote, if she was just a retired doctor, it wouldn't be an issue, end quote. But instead, again, quoting from the Associated Press story, Johnson is vice chairwoman of her town's Democratic Committee and a member of the Hillsborough County Democratic Committee. She helps campaigns by distributing posters and making calls, and she held a get-out-the-vote session for Howard Dean at her house. Groves, the vice president of the insurance company, said, that's enough. They canceled her policies. What has happened to our nation? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tim in Illinois, you have some thoughts on this or some other topic?
Well, I do have thoughts on that. I think that that's one of the most chilling accounts
that I've ever heard about something in the United States of America.
I thought so, too. It's why I had to share.
Absolutely chilling that something like that could happen in this country. But a lot of talk today has been about labor, and I wanted to give the listeners a heads up on something that just happened in Missouri.
Okay.
The new governor there, a con named Matt Blunt, on his first day in office, he rescinded the former Democratic governor's executive order that gave state employees collective bargaining rights.
Whoa. So you've got this. The governor of Missouri has just now said you can't have a union if you're an employee of the state?
Right. He rescinded the order. The order was put into effect by the former governor in 2001.
Yeah.
I don't know the history beyond that.
Well, this is part of Bush's agenda. You know, Bush is trying to privatize 800,000 federal jobs because these are federal workers are unionized. This is all about breaking the back of organized labor. And they say that they're trying to break the back of organized labor because it drives up the cost of goods, right? They're driving up the cost of labor to have people organized. The real reason they're trying to break the back of organized labor is because organized labor is where people, average working people like you and me, can collectively have our voices heard politically. And they want to render politically impotent the average American. They want it to be only fat cats, you know, the super wealthy and corporate CEOs giving money to political campaigns.
By the way, as an aside, this affected 30,000 people.
Wow.
30,000 people got steamrolled by this con in Missouri. Now, my understanding is that the same thing just happened in Indiana. I don't have any facts about that, so I haven't researched it, but I wanted to give you the heads up on Missouri. 30,000 people just got steamrolled Tuesday by this con.
Now, here, Tim, here's the even more outrageous thing than what you just described. As outrageous as that is, here's the even more outrageous part. That in the news today or yesterday, you will hear about a corporation making a greater profit or a corporation stock going down or Apple's new iPod or what. You will hear the business news represented as economic news, right? But the economy, really where the economy, where the rubber meets the road is where the economy interfaces with you and me, which is what you just described. I'll bet you anything that this is not going to be in the newspapers outside of the states that it affected, that it's simply not going to be touched. This is not going to be a news story as far as the national media is concerned.
No, I'm surprised I saw it in the Kansas City Star.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this whole idea of how...
And that's in Missouri. That's in the state where it happened, you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just so irritated by this phenomenon in the United States where the mass news media, the corporate media, how they interpret what, quote, the economy is.
Yeah.
The economy is doing wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, that's right if you've got $1 million in the stock market.
There you go. Or $1 million to loan out, or on it goes. Tim, thanks for the call. It's our chilly news day, I guess. We're going to hear from some news editors on that at the bottom of the hour. Right now, Lynn in Eureka, California is on the line. Hey, Lynn, welcome to the program. Happy Friday, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, whatever may be appropriate. How you doing?
Good. How you doing, Tom?
Great.
Listen, I called. A couple of things have kind of irked me recently. I've seen some ads, first for Walmart, telling us how wonderful they are.
Oh, they even have a new propaganda website.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's called WalmartFacts.com.
I see.
F-A-C-T-S.
But the one that irked me the most was I saw in one day, I saw three ads, and I haven't seen them since, but they were all from the Homeland Security group telling us that we should remain afraid and how we can protect ourselves. And it seems to me like it's kind of like keeping us afraid for the next election.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As this is... You know, James Madison said, no nation can retain its freedom in the face of perpetual war.
Yeah.
And George Bush has as much as said, guess what, guys, you've got perpetual war.
Yeah, they did. They said that the war on terror was probably an endless war. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's as if they read George Orwell's 1984, which which unfortunately is no longer required reading in school. I mean, when I was in high school in the 1960s, you had to read the book.
Yeah.
My kids, who are now, my oldest is in her early 30s and my youngest is in her early 20s. So my kids who are, you know, of the second and third generation to come along, they didn't have to read that in school.
Yeah.
It wasn't even discussed.
Yeah.
And this is the product, in my opinion, of the educational reforms of the Reagan administration and the political correctness that has been imposed upon education by the right, where in education, people are just terrified to talk about anything that might have to do with real freedom. Although they are encouraged to discuss the fact that Darwin's theory is just a theory. It's just nuts. Lynn, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Kim in Denver, Colorado on the line. Hey, Kim, what's up?
Yes, I just wondered if you had heard of, speaking of the labor issues, the labor leader that was killed in Iraq on January 4th.
Yes, yes. And I
don't know if you covered the story.
You know, I did not. And I should have. I had it in a stack of stuff, and that particular day I didn't get to it, and the next day I didn't get to it. And I usually get through about two-thirds of what I have for the program for every day, and you're right. And where I wanted to take that into an even larger story is that not only was the guy who was the head of the more or less labor movement in Iraq killed, but that the constitution that we imposed on Iraq makes it illegal to unionize. It's illegal to form private unions. We have allowed Iraq to do the same thing that China has done, which is that there can be one state-supported union, and that's it, and it's not a real union. And, you know, this guy was an advocate for free and independent labor unions, and guess what? He gets killed. What a surprise. So.
Yeah, in a particularly brutal way, I understand.
Yeah, he was assassinated. He was assassinated in his home, as I recall. Kim,
yeah.
thanks for the call. I appreciate it, and thanks for raising that. Give me a chance to rant about it. I appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
get. Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartmann program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartmann.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's becoming more precarious for failing to toe the line in what I believe in. Sounds like freedom to me. Like
yeah. There you go, like the Sons of Liberty.
In 1773.
1773, you know, that was when the Boston Tea Party happened, by the way, and it happened last month. It was in December, as I recall. So, welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Our quote for the day from Winston Churchill: the inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of blessings. The inherent vice of socialism is the equal sharing of miseries. So what do? We have a little bit of both. We have regulated capitalism so you don't end up with a handful of corporations owning everything on the one hand, and a little bit of what some folks would call socialism so that you don't have people falling through the cracks if they fall on hard times. It's called the American way. Welcome to it. Let's compare a couple of investigations. There are two big investigations that have just been completed and reported on in the news this last week. Today's Friday, wrapping up the week here. Let's see, there's Rathergate and Weaponsgate. The question of whether or not Dan Rather committed journalistic stupidity in using documents that he could not prove were not forged. It has not yet been proven that they were forged, by the way, contrary to what you probably have heard on faux news. It also has not been proved that they were not forged. In other words, nobody knows. They may well still be genuine. Number one, Rathergate versus Weaponsgate. Well, let's just go through it. In both cases, the investigation was recently concluded. Did they use highly questionable supporting documents? Rathergate, yes. Weapongate? Saddam's weapons of mass destruction? Yes. Were the central claims disproven? Well, in the case of Weaponsgate, yes. Turns out that Saddam did not have the weapons of mass destruction. In the case of Rathergate, the central claim was that Bush used influence to get into the National Guard and then didn't show up for a year. That was not disproven. In fact, it turns out that there's a lot of supporting evidence. Did the media spread questionable information with regard to Rathergate? Yes. With regard to Saddam's weapons of mass destruction? Yes. How many people were fired as the result of Rathergate? 4. How many people were fired as the result of Weaponsgate? None. How many high-profile reassignments were there? 1 at Rathergate, Dan Rather himself. Saddam, or George W. Bush, Weapongate, none. Number of wars started using flawed justification. Rathergate, 0. Weaponsgate, 1. Cost the American taxpayer of Dan Rather's mistakes? 0. Cost the American taxpayer of George W. Bush's mistake? $150 billion as of today and counting. Number of American soldiers killed as a result of Rathergate. You put this in context, you wonder why the right-wing talk show hosts want to do nothing but prattle on and on and on about this, you know? Number of American soldiers killed as a result of Rathergate, zero. As a result of Saddam, of Weapongate, 1,357. That was as of the 12th. Number of British soldiers killed as a result of Rathergate, zero, 76 as of the 12th for Weaponsgate. Number of other non-Iraqi ally soldiers killed as a result, zero for Rathergate, 84 for Weaponsgate. Number of Iraqi policemen killed over the last 4 months as a result of Rathergate, zero. Weaponsgate, over 1,300. Number of Iraqi civilians killed as a result of what Dan Rather did, none. As a result of what George W. Bush, Weaponsgate, operating on bad intelligence. Over 100,000, according to the British journal The Lancet. Number of Al-Qaeda training camps destroyed as a result of Rathergate, zero. But number of Al-Qaeda training camps destroyed as a result of Weaponsgate, zero also. Number of terrorist plots against the U.S. foiled as a result. Rathergate, zero. Weaponsgate, also zero. Saddam torture chambers shut down as a result of Rathergate. No. Were they shut down as a result of Weaponsgate? No. Iraqi people enjoying freedom? No from Rathergate. No from Weaponsgate. And on it goes. 29 minutes past the hour.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, do you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do. Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. Supreme Court has handed a victory to low-wage workers. It refused to hear an appeal of a San Francisco U.S. court decision upholding Berkeley, California's living wage ordinance. Skates on the Bay, a non-union waterfront restaurant in Berkeley's marina, had challenged an extension of that law. Berkeley City Attorney Manuela Albuquerque says this is important for other cities around the nation that want to enact similar living wage ordinances.
The Ninth Circuit decision, which the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear, was a very thoughtful, scholarly opinion, and it established that social welfare legislation of this sort is to be treated with a great deal of deference in the courts.
The U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco said in its ruling that the city was entitled to extend its living wage ordinance to a particular area in order to ensure decent living standards for workers. Albuquerque says that's a win for labor.
Oh, absolutely, because it's protective labor legislation that we enact for the benefit of workers.
More than 100 cities nationwide now have living wage ordinances.
The National Union for Boxers is asking President George W. Bush to grant a full pardon to the first black heavyweight champion of the world, Jack Johnson. The Joint Association of Boxers is asking for the pardon in recognition of both Martin Luther King Day and out of respect for the first African-American athlete to break through the color barrier. Johnson, who passed away in 1946, held the title from 1908 to 1915. During the time he defended his title, he battled many so-called great white hopes. One such victory over James J. Jeffries sparked race riots and led to some states banning the filming of his victories over white fighters. In 1912, Johnson was arrested for transporting his white fiancée across state lines under a law originally intended to combat prostitution. He was eventually sentenced to a year in prison, but fled the United States and continued fighting in other parts of the world. Eventually, he returned to the United States and served out his sentence. Many feel Johnson was convicted solely on prejudice, and the Boxers Union is seeking exoneration of the charges. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Want to know if your job is going to be cut? A recent survey of human resource executives reveals that the decision to cut a position is not as arbitrary as some may think. Tenure and job title are the prime factors in job cuts. However, 36% of companies do consider performance when looking to make that slice. The survey, conducted by the firm Lee Hecht Harrison, also says that 29% consider employees' skills.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's first-hand, second-hand news. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. Time for our regular Friday afternoon segment, the second half of the second hour of our three-hour program. It is the best of the rest of the news you don't hear in the mainstream media, with the founders and editors of the new progressive media, primarily our websites out here. And today we have with us John Verity. He's the founder and editor of www.notthistimegeorge.org, and also has a new website, bushblackout.com, which we're going to talk about. But Not This Time George links to stories about fraud and recounts. And Jeff Tiedrich, who is the founder and editor of smirkingchimp.com. And welcome to both of you, gentlemen.
Hi there,
hello.
Tom.
Hey, let's start out with you, John. John, with bushblackout.com. This, I'm assuming it's a spinoff of your Not This Time George, or perhaps it's a whole independent venture that you've got there. But tell us about this, or you know, my official question here, really, for both of you at the beginning is, what's the top story of the week? I'm assuming this is it for you, or something close to it, right?
Yeah, for us, it's definitely a coronation / inauguration of Bush next week.
Okay, and to tell us about what you're doing about that.
Well, you know, Not This Time George sprung up as a, you know, reaction to the election. We needed some place for us to dump these links to these awesome stories that were going untalked about in the media.
Uh-huh.
So as the site took off and started to get a nice hold, me and the other webmaster, Steve, decided that for the inauguration, we would replace the site for a day with a black page, simple mm-hmm. protest.
Yeah.
The idea seemed to be good enough to take hold, and we decided that bushblackout.com was needed mm-hmm. to really get the message out there.
Yeah. And on bushblackout.com, I looked at it a few days ago. There were a bunch of suggested pages or graphics that you could copy onto your own website and that basically said, this website is closed for the day in mourning.
Yeah, in protest of the inauguration of George Bush, and then we have a great quote from Dwight Eisenhower on the page, which really gets the right-wing nuts going.
Which is?
Which is, every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in a final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed.
Yeah. A man,
Dwight, April 16, 1953.
Yeah, Dwight Eisenhower, who actually described himself as a liberal on occasion. and a good man. I think he was a good president, frankly. Okay, John, you've got bushblackout.com and notthistimegeorge.org, your main website. Jeff Tiedrich is the founder and editor of smirkingchimp.com, which is another great website we use a lot as a resource of news and information for this program. Jeff, welcome to the show. What are your thoughts? For you at smirkingchimp.com, what's the top issue or story or stories that you've seen this past week?
Well, I like to pull on the stuff that really is underreported. And earlier this week, I found something out of Georgia. As you know, the National Guard is having a very difficult time getting people to sign in. Nobody wants to go to Iraq. And so what they've been doing is they've been hanging out at high schools and malls and pizza joints and signing up teenagers, you know, as young as 14. Now, they're not signing them up at 14, but they're proselytizing.
Yeah. Now I'm assuming you saw Fahrenheit 9/11.
I did. Yes.
Yeah. It's funny. The day after Louise and I saw that movie, she went over to our local mall, which is connected to another town nearby. That's a kind of a blue collar working community, and it's the kind of downscale mall in the area, right?
Right.
And there they were, the recruiters walking around the parking lot hitting up teenagers. You know, mm-hmm. it was if they weren't wearing recruiting uniforms, you'd call the police and say, I think we have child molesters in the area. You know,
it was incredible. The strange guy hanging out at the basketball court.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So you found that not only are they going after 17-year-olds who can legally join, but now they're going after 14-year-olds?
According to this article, yes, and they're getting commitments. Obviously, if you sign up for the National Guard, you don't begin going to basic training until you're 17. But they will get these kids going to monthly meetings where they show them slideshows about being in the military, and they're very polite to them. They don't yell at them. You know, they just sort of misrepresent themselves as this nice, friendly place to hang out, and they're paying them $150 a month to attend these meetings. So that's really how they're enticing them. They go to the economically disadvantaged areas, and they're saying, here, we can give you money if you come to these meetings.
It's amazing. It's like joining the Boy Scouts, only instead of paying the Boy Scouts for your uniform, they pay you to come.
Right.
That's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. Well, that's a good one. And that's your story on SmirkingChimp.com. Now, for both of you, John, with NotThisTimeGeorge.org, your website has a heavy emphasis on voter fraud and the whole recount thing, which just wrapped up the week before last in Ohio. And last week there was, still this ongoing discussion and the remarkable event in the United States Congress, the same day that we had Gonzalez hearings, was the day that the Electoral College was challenged, the first time in history. And I, personally, my own little conspiracy theory was that they had Gonzalez hearings scheduled that day so that nobody would pay any attention to the Electoral College. And with regard to the mainstream media, it worked. What sort of buzz are you getting on your website about this? How are people responding?
Well, we've been seeing good bit of traffic we get, particularly on those election hits. Our main focus of the site has been basically the election and the stories that were relating to that. We have been seeing plenty of traffic through for that reason. We're also posting plenty of other stories on the site.
Yeah, John, is it mostly traffic of the, this is terrible, or, I'm really upset variety, or do you have a fair amount of traffic of the, hey, I was working in Precinct 7, District 3 in the county of, Volusia in Florida, and here's what I saw, and please somebody come and depose me kind of stuff?
No, we haven't seen too many of those stories directly ourselves. I don't think our site has gotten big enough to get those kind of hot tips yet.
Mm-hmm. But you're getting a lot of discussion about the election. What's the broad consensus? Do you think most people feel that this election was stolen?
I'm not sure so much they would say stolen, but there's plenty of belief out there that the election was taken through the lies and the constant pushing of lies through the media.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is not, I'm very distrustful of electronic voting machines that produce no paper trail.
I'm a programmer myself, and paper trail, I cannot imagine not having one. They wouldn't produce an ATM. You wouldn't, use your credit card without expecting a receipt. I don't know how you can place such a lack of value in a vote.
Yeah, and there's a discussion now. I believe I saw it this morning. I don't have it in my stack for today, but I saw a story, maybe it was yesterday, about a state. I think it's New Jersey. I could be wrong. Where there are state legislators trying to pass laws mandating a voter verified ballot, a paper trail from any electronic voting machines, and the Republicans are trying everything short of a filibuster to prevent this from even being discussed, much less becoming state law.
One of the stories I heard just today was that a Blackwell up in Ohio there has decided that the electronic voting machines weren't good enough, and he's pushing to go pure optical scanner ballot so that they have a paper trail. I can't imagine why he couldn't make that decision 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, it might have something to do with trying to redeem his reputation since he intends to run for governor, and he's already sent out this fundraising letter.
Well, if I could jump in for a moment.
Sure, go for it, Jeff.
I have a problem with any kind of electronic voting machine, even those that give you a verified paper printout. It's very easy to program something like that where if you push a button, say, for carry, and even though it prints out that you pushed your button for carry, it could record a vote for Bush. And there's no way to know because it's all happening inside a black box.
Right, right.
Yeah, and the key to that is the recount doesn't happen to the paper unless there's a discrepancy.
Right, and unless
and
there's
enough
and there's,
that
and there's,
the discrepancy is in their favor, the manual recount would never be kicked off.
Yeah, and then and there's these thresholds that are required. In many states, you have to have 2% or 3% variation, or you know, it has to be within, or in some cases, even 0.3%. You know, if the difference is greater than that, then you can't have a recount. And
right.
And so you just rig the machine so you get a greater difference. And now this is so my argument about this and giving a reality check here, Jeff, smirkingchimp.com. I'm suggesting, number one, you know, technology is here. Although I think, you know, I used to live in I lived for a year in Germany back in 86. And to this day in Germany, as in most of the countries of the world, Canada, you know, people vote on a piece of paper with a pencil. And they are hand counted by civil servants who take time off from their regular jobs for a couple of days every year or every 4 years or however many, you know, every couple of years and count ballots. And they do it with the people from the parties watching over their shoulders. And,
absolutely.
You know, it takes a couple of days. But, you know, at the end of the night, who won and who lost by and large, because the exit polls in Germany since the 50s have never been more than 0.1% off. And so, you know, it's and you get it verified. So I think, frankly, personally, that we should go back to paper. However. That said, I think the reality is that, number one, America has such a love of technology, and number two, paper is harder with instant runoff voting. And I'm a big advocate of instant runoff voting that I don't think we're going to go back to paper. So the solution, it seems, is open source software. That is to say that no corporation can own the software in the box. We can have private corporations building the boxes, but they have to sell them to the states. They're owned by the states. They're maintained by the states. The software is programmed by the states. It's programmed in an open source fashion. These computers are not connected to modems. They're not connected to any sort of network. And it is all done in a way that is completely transparent and can be verified by anybody. Would that satisfy your concerns, Jeff?
Well, you know, going beyond that, the people that actually run the elections, we can't have fierce partisans from either side, really. You know, Ken Blackwell or Catherine Harris. A Secretary of State shouldn't also be the Bush campaign manager for that state.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'll give you that. But even if they were, if you had open source software and you had voting machines that were managed by professional, well, if they were managed by bureaucrats who were under the supervision of Blackwell or Harris, then we're back to the problem that we have right now. You're right.
Because even though it's open source. It possibly makes it even easier to hack it because you've got your source code right there. It's published. There's nothing to say that local people can't go in and make changes to these things after they've already been delivered to the election commission.
Yeah. Unless you have, boy, you'd have to have some sort of redundancy, some sort of secondary check, an internal secondary check. You know, sort of like they have in evidence, in criminal cases where, you know, one person signs off on it, then another person signs off on it.
Cheating has always gone on in elections. Just electronic machines just make it so much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More difficult to detect.
Yeah. Your thoughts on
the best possible use of an electronic machine would not be as a ballot counter, but as a ballot printer to make sure that the ballot gets filled in correctly. Then it's counted as a piece of paper and not through the machine itself.
Right, and then the machine doesn't do any counting whatsoever. But
right,
then,
just prints the ballot correctly.
Right, but then you've got ballots. I mean, in a lot of states, these ballots are so complex. In California, you had a ballot that had over 100 items on it. You're not going to have individual civil servants sitting there counting all those. I mean, it's going to have to be machine scanned, which brings us back to computers.
Right.
What also brings us back to a federal standard that you can't have every state being different.
Why not?
Well, if you're going to have a federal law over how the ballots are treated and counted and handled, then it needs to apply to everybody, and each state cannot form their own laws and vary the way they're doing the counting, which is where the sticking points on the last two recounts have gone, how they were actually doing the counting.
Interesting. Ira, if that's a caller who wants to get in this conversation, I've figured out how to make this phone system work so we can pull callers in, so... 1-866-889-8894. I'm talking to our call screener here. Interesting. Boy, the situation just gets more and more complicated on the one hand.
It's a real can of worms.
Yeah, it really, really is. Jeff Tiedrick of SmirkingChimp.com, are these stories persisting now, or do you think that this whole election thing is going to be put behind us? And for that matter, let me even shift into the, because we've only got 3 minutes left here, into the next thing, and that is, what do you see coming up? What do you think are going to be the big stories for the next week or two?
Well, the Armstrong-Williams thing ain't going anywhere. I expect to hear a lot more about that.
As far as the mainstream media goes, they'll probably flog Rathergate as much as possible.
Yeah. You think they're going to continue that into next week, Jeff?
They'll try.
Yeah. And, of course, next week we've got the inauguration.
Oh, absolutely. You're right.
Do you think that'll
take up 3 days at least.
Yeah. Do you think that the turn your back on Bush thing is going to catch any traction?
I'm hoping.
It all depends on if it gets reported on. I don't know if you recall, but in the first Bush inauguration, people threw eggs at him.
Yeah, and it was not reported.
And the cameras cut very quickly away to that, and he got back in his car and they sped off. And anybody who didn't see it as it happened didn't see it again.
Right.
It wasn't replayed on the news.
Yeah.
So protest is really only effective if it gets reported. And I'm very cynical about the mainstream media and what they'll report on.
Yeah, well said, Jeff. John of bushblackout.com and notthistimegeorge.com. That was Jeff of smirkingchimp.com. John, what do you see coming up over the next week in the minute we have left here?
Well, it would certainly be the inauguration being a big deal. See what kind of civil disobedience goes on. If it's anything like the Republican convention, how many people will be locked up next week? Treated like terrorists themselves.
Yeah, they're going to have free speech zones, presumably, and the whole thing. Incredible. It's the best of the rest of the news segment. We've been talking with John Verity of notthistimegeorge.org and bushblackout.com, and Jeff Tiedrick, who's the founder and editor of smirkingchimp.com, both excellent websites. Thank you, gentlemen, both for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Have a great one, a good weekend. It's 10 minutes before the hour on the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball,
to tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund you money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxon Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Yeah, take another little chunk of democracy, George. It's just the White House here. This from the Washington Post today. The White House will seek to drastically shrink the Department of Housing and Urban Development's $8 billion community branch, purging dozens of economic development programs, scrapping a rural housing program, and folding high-profile anti-poverty efforts into the Labor and Commerce Department's administration official said yesterday. Why? Because they only benefit poor people.
Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, these guys say. What? You have no bootstraps? Well, it just must be that Darwin was right and you're inferior.
That's the conservative. Oh, this goes beyond conservative. This is the right wing. The right wing radical perspective. The radical right wingers. Advocates for the poor, however, contend that the White House is trying to gut federal programs for the poorest Americans to make way for tax cuts for the rich, as well as a mission to Mars. Figure that one out. Dennis in Illinois, last thoughts for this hour. Hey, Dennis.
Hey, yeah. Excuse me. Let me start over.
Okay.
I'm a recovering Democrat. I was a Democrat till about 2 years into Bill Clinton's term.
Uh-huh.
And I'd sit around from today to day, try to justify the lies that the Democrats told. And one day I said to myself, I'm not going to do it anymore.
Yeah, well, there's a fair number of them. There's a fair number of lies told on both sides. What's your point?
Yeah. Well, To me, you're like the negative of a picture to Rush Limbaugh. To hear you tell it, the Democrats do no wrong. To hear Rush tell it, the Republicans do no wrong.
Well, I got to say, Dennis, if you think that, then you have not been listening to this program very much.
But
because
I am one
of Bill Clinton's biggest critics. I think he sold this country down the tubes with the Telecommunications Act of 1996 and NAFTA and GATT, and he created that. In fact, three-quarters of this economic disaster that we've got right now is not George W. Bush's fault. It's Bill Clinton's fault.
I have never heard you say anything like that.
Well, I say that at least once or twice a week and have for 2 years on this program. Ask any of our listeners.
I am 100% on that part of it.
Okay, well, thank you very much. It's good to hear from you, Dennis.
All right.
And anytime you want to disagree with me on any point, you know, name calling doesn't get either one of us anywhere. You know, calling me the other side of Rush Limbaugh.
I didn't call your name, did I?
Well, you said I was the negative of Rush Limbaugh, and I take offense at that.
Well, that's true, though. That's true.
Okay, well, see, I don't think so. I think that's just, you know, that's frankly name calling. But pick an issue, and call back some other time. I'll take you on. We'll talk about it. I would be glad to discuss it. I love talking to people who disagree with me. 1-866-889-8894, in fact, our number. We got another hour to go. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Viagra for your brain.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. Supreme Court has handed a victory to low-wage workers. It refused to hear an appeal of a San Francisco U.S. court decision upholding Berkeley, California's living wage ordinance. Skates on the Bay, a non-union waterfront restaurant in Berkeley's marina, had challenged an extension of that law. Berkeley City Attorney Manuela Albuquerque says this is important for other cities around the nation that want to enact similar living wage ordinances.
The Ninth Circuit decision, which the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear, was a very thoughtful, scholarly opinion, and it established that social welfare legislation of this sort is to be treated with a great deal of deference in the courts.
The U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco said in its ruling that the city was entitled to extend its living wage ordinance to a particular area in order to ensure decent living standards for workers. Albuquerque says that's a win for labor.
Oh, absolutely, because it's protective labor legislation that we enacted for the benefit of workers.
More than 100 cities nationwide now have living wage ordinances.
The National Union for Boxers is asking President George W. Bush to grant a full pardon to the first black heavyweight champion of the world, Jack Johnson. The Joint Association of Boxers is asking for the pardon in recognition of both Martin Luther King Day and out of respect for the first African-American athlete to break through the color barrier. Johnson, who passed away in 1946, held the title from 1908 to 1915. During the time he defended his title, he battled many so-called great white hopes. One such victory over James J. Jeffries sparked race riots and led to some states banning the filming of his victories over white fighters. In 1912, Johnson was arrested for transporting his white fiancée across state lines under a law originally intended to combat prostitution. He was eventually sentenced to a year in prison, but fled the United States and continued fighting in other parts of the world. Eventually, he returned to the United States and served out his sentence. Many feel Johnson was convicted solely on prejudice, and the Boxers Union is seeking exoneration of the charges. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Want to know if your job is going to be cut? A recent survey of human resource executives reveals that the decision to cut a position is not as arbitrary as some may think. Tenure and job title are the prime factors in job cuts. However, 36% of companies do consider performance when looking to make that slice. The survey, conducted by the firm Lee Hecht Harrison, also says that 29% consider employees' skills.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Maybe you're one of the 2 million Americans who've recently had their jobs offshore to India, Pakistan, and elsewhere. Or one of the millions more expected to have your job shipped abroad in the next few years. If so, don't worry, bucko, for a new growth industry has arisen that offers exciting job opportunities for you discarded Americans. You, too, could become an American accent and culture trainer. It seems that while such corporations as Citibank, Dell, GE, and Microsoft are eager to abandon the U.S. and move their telephone service jobs to low-wage workers abroad, these English-speaking foreign workers are, well, foreign. So their accents and cultural references can be jarring to U.S. customers placing orders or seeking help. Thus, offshoring companies are hiring Americans to teach foreign replacement workers to sound and behave like Americans. Yes, this means you could end up teaching the Indian or Pakistani or Russian who was given your job how to sound like you. Courses in American Culture 101 include U.S. history memorization, American slang, basic sports knowledge, and pop culture. Quick, what's the Lone Star State? Who are the Florida Marlins? Can you name one talent that Britney Spears has? What's a burrito? The lesson plans for these courses include having to watch episodes of Friends and screening such films as Bruce Almighty. As for accents, there are voice exercises for Indians, for example, to help them lower their natural high-pitched and clipped pronunciation of English. And if the exercises are not enough, the corporate call centers use technology to filter the telephone voices of the foreign service reps, making them sound lower than they are. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, it won't be long before the corporations train low-paid foreigners to teach American accents and culture to foreign workers. Then there'll be no need for American workers at all.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Repent, neoconservatives! The day of reckoning is nigh.
So say many conservatives. Get that. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com, the website, if you want to drop into the live chat room, if you want to participate in our message board, or if you would like to read my regular pontifications, click the Articles on Democracy link, and you will find some things that you may find interesting. Anyhow, here we have the Heritage Foundation is no longer happy. No longer happy, they say, with some members of the Bush administration. You get this. This an article in the Village Voice by James Ridgway this week. A Dateline Washington, D.C., a week before the $40 million inauguration, right-wingers are tearing themselves to pieces. Now, see, this is exactly what I predicted a year ago. 1 year, you go back and you listen to the archives of this show. In fact, you can probably, I don't know if Mike Toth pulled out one of these in the specific archives, if you'll find them at TomHartman.com. There's a whole bunch of archives that are like subject by subject. I don't know if he has one of my predictions in there or not, but I have said many times, actually, on this program, that if George Bush was elected and the Republicans continued to hold the House and Senate, so they would have nobody to blame, they would have to take responsibility for their agenda, it would be out in the open and everyone could see what these guys were up to, that their real agenda was establishing generations of absolute power and dominance by a small, wealthy elite. And that this is consistent with conservative thought going back hundreds of years. You could argue tens of thousands of years if you want to get into the realm of kingdoms. But I would say modern-day conservatives of the Russell Kirk variety, now deceased, even of the variety of folks, right, you know, the John Adams variety, the Edmund Burke variety from the 1700s, the late 1700s, early 1800s, who did not believe in aristocracy, but did believe in an ordered society, who believed in hierarchy, that you had to have hierarchy, that you had to have very wealthy people at the top who control most of the wealth and the means of communication. And this is why John Adams passed the Alien and Sedition Acts to put newspaper editors in prison. Remember? One of the first people he put in jail was Benjamin Franklin's grandson, Benjamin Franklin Bach, who published the Aurora, a newspaper in Massachusetts. So anyhow, you've got what I said was, if the cons continue to control everything, and here they are, the two things would happen. One, Americans would see what they're really up to and would be revolted by it. And we are seeing this happen all across the United States. It's reached the point now where even right-wing talk radio can't get away with the kind of stuff that they have been spewing out for years, and people have just been, oh, yeah, oh, gee, that makes sense, uh-huh, oh, yeah. Oh, it's your money. How dare they take your money in taxes, for example. Let's completely ignore the fact that we, the people, through our elected representatives, we decided that we would like to have police and fire departments and roads, and we the people, agreed, the majority of us anyway, that we would like to have some welfare programs in place so that when the middle class and the wealthy among us, which in combination is probably the majority of Americans, and maybe a quarter of us are the working poor, that when we walk out of our homes, we're not confronted by beggars, right? For the most selfish of reasons, we decided that we would like to have welfare programs, that we would like to provide bootstraps to people so that they can pull themselves up with. And yet for years, Americans listened to folks like Hannity and Limbaugh going, "That's your tax dollars. They have no right to them." Completely overlooking the fact that we had already said to ourselves, we're going to have these programs, we're going to have a social safety net, we are going to have police and fire departments, we're going to have education, we're going to have schools, we're going to give people an opportunity to participate in the society, and we're going to pay for it. And the moment that we say we're going to have these programs, and the moment that we say we're going to pay for it, it no longer is your money or my money. We have made an agreement in advance to say we're part of this nation, we're part of this society, we're entering into a social contract, a social compact, and part of that social contract or compact is that we're going to have certain services and we're going to pay for them. Now, the cons, of course, would like to set it up so that we can have them and our children or our grandchildren pay for them. And believe it or not, millions of Americans actually swallowed that stuff for years, actually heard it and believed it. Excuse me, but they're waking up. They are waking up. That was my first prediction, that people would figure out what was going on. People would figure out what the con agenda really was and was really all about, number one. And my second prediction, and ultimately would throw them out, throw the bums out. The only, you know, without rigged voting machines, there's no way these guys can pull off another election or two, because the pendulum is simply swinging back. It happens. It happens. It went to the left in the 1770s. It went to the right in the 1830s. It went to the left in the 1860s. It went to the right in the 1890s. It went to the left in the 1930s. It went to the right in the 1950s. It went to the left in the 1970s, 60s and 70s. It went to the right in the 1980s through now, and it's going to go back to the left. And these are not huge swings, but they're significant swings, and they always have. They're because we are basically a people in the middle. We are the radical middle. I mean, there is rationality to the American people. But the cons, they're not going to. So anyhow, my first prediction, people would wake up and eventually throw the bums out unless the bums figure out a way to completely rig the system, as I fear they may have. But even this too shall pass, I'll tell you, because people are starting to stand up and say, no, if I push a button on a machine, I want to know what happened to that vote. So, number one, people are going to wake up and throw them out, and mark my words. And number two, I predicted, if the cons continue to hold power, that they would begin to fight among themselves. Because there are different flavors of conservatives out there. There are the neocons, who are essentially Stalinists. They consider themselves small D Democrats and small R Republicans. You know, they really believe that democracy is a good thing, and that we should bring democracy to the rest of the world at the barrel of a gun. Which means they don't really believe democracy is a good thing, but it's a good line to talk. Oh yeah, we're all about democracy. That's what we're all about. Yeah. So you've got the neocons, the most fascistic of the conservatives, the ones who believe in the big lie, the ones who believe the means justify the end, the ones who believe in using the rhetoric of democracy in order to promote an anti-democratic agenda. And then you've got the old-fashioned Barry Goldwater, Everett Dirksen, even to some extent Dwight Eisenhower, Richard Nixon conservatives.
Did he just say Richard Nixon?
Yes.
Yes, he did. I think he did. Well, I can't believe he said Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon's the conservative.
Yes, Richard Nixon. That's who I said. I'm telling you, if Richard Nixon was around today, he'd be puking. He'd be looking at this Bush as corrupt and sick and cynical and disgusting as Richard Nixon was. He would be looking at what's going on in the Bush administration and going, these guys have gone too far. I'm serious. And to prove it, here, you know, his political heirs, the Heritage Foundation, John McCain. Well, here, Edwin L. Fulner, the Heritage president, the president of the Heritage Foundation, and heretofore regarded as a strong Bush man, chastised the president. This is the Heritage Foundation. Twice I've engaged in debates in the Heritage Foundation with cons that have been televised on C-SPAN. We've had guests from the Heritage Foundation on this program. There's actually some decent people there who really believe their line. Right? I mean, there's some true believers over there. And as such, even though I strongly disagree with them, I would say that there are some people over there of some integrity. And here you have the president of the Heritage Foundation saying, quote, "Sadly, commitment to principle has been missing in Washington's politics for quite some time." You get this? Commitment to principle has been missing in Washington politics for quite some time. This is the document from the Heritage Foundation, paints Bush as a big spender, adding to entitlements, his Medicare drug plan, and holding the economy with regulations. What a mess. What an absolute mess. Well, I'm telling you, they're tearing themselves apart. Pat Buchanan, article on January 12th. "The neoconservative hour may be coming to an end in the Bush era. Reason, the cakewalk war they plotted long before 9/11, on which their dreams of Middle East empire and reputations hang, has gone awry." Boy, has it gone awry. Let's hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Walt in Crescent City, California on the line. Hey, Walt, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's up?
I wanted to ask you if you've ever done anything on a book written by a doctor, Marisa Angel. She is editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, or was for 20 years. The story is about the corruption in the drug industry.
What's the title of the book?
It's The Truth About the Drug Companies.
Oh, yeah, I have it. Along with several other books that a friend of mine who's very active in the Physicians for National Healthcare Program, PNHP,
I really love to hear you do something about it on the air, because the average person has no idea how corrupt the industry is.
Oh, it's mind-boggling. I have in the past. It's been a while, so it's a good reminder, and I'll get back to that, Walt.
Okay,
I'll
good.
Do that.
Thanks
in fact,
very
we
much.
We need to get one of the PNHP people on here to do a whole show about
Have her on the air.
Yeah, and do That'd a show about the need for national health care program in the United States, because it is an absolute mess. Paul, thanks so much. Walt, thanks so much for the call. Paul is up next. I do appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Talk radio for the rest of us.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
get. Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Listening to you, I get the music. Gazing at you, I get the heat. Following you, I climb the mountain.
There you go.
I get excitement at your feet.
And welcome back.
Ah, there is just some great music in this world, I gotta tell you. Life is such a gift, isn't it? I mean, here it is. It's a kind of a gray, rainy day here in the People's Republic of Vermont. And still, I look around and I just have to say, maybe it's because I've been drinking green tea here for the last 3 hours, but life is such a gift. I am so grateful. I'm so grateful for this show. I'm so grateful for your listening. I'm so grateful for Ira out there who's engineering the program and answering the phones, and for Louise who has put together and produce the program and help put it together, and to Shelby for streaming us on radiopower.org, and Ben Birch for holding our archives over on White Rose Society, and Mike Toth for the archives on our website, and all the folks who are hanging out in our chat room. And I just have to say, and for great music, what a gift. Anyhow, pardon my discursion into maudlinism or whatever it is. Let's go back to the telephones. We get back to reality here. Paul in Detroit, Michigan on the line. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind?
Hello, Tom. I just wanted to mention from today's BBC World News, there's a good example of as to how our justice system works here in the United States to all the people into the Middle East and the world. Staff Sergeant Cardenas Elvin has been convicted of murdering a 16-year-old Iraqi and also conspiracy to commit murder at a court-martial in Baghdad, and his sentence is 1 year.
Yeah. Well, now, let me ask you, Paul, have you ever been in or near a war zone?
Well, you know, he played God, and so two counts, conspiracy to commit murder and also committing murder. He decided that he'd shoot this person in the head.
Yeah.
And also today, President Bush has publicly expressed his regret for his bring 'em on statement.
Well, that's nice, because that's where I was going with that comment when I asked you about the war zone. I actually went through basic training during the Vietnam War. And my recollection is you're being trained to kill. And in fact, you yell, kill! And you know, it's I mean, the stuff that Arlo Guthrie makes fun of is real. And war is hell. I've not been in a war zone as a combatant. I've been in a war zone. I've been in war zones as an international relief worker. And there is absolute insanity. And while I think it's extraordinary and a good thing that when people commit murder in war, as opposed to, you know, the killing of war that is the quote necessary part of it, that's a whole other argument. You know, I'd like to see all war eliminated. But nonetheless, if this guy committed murder, I would say that there are extenuating circumstances, and that those extenuating circumstances are that he's in the middle of a war that is not legal, that was declared by somebody who had lied to him. I mean, the entire zeitgeist is one of get away with lies. Of it's okay to get away with lies. It's okay. The ends justify the means. It was a lied into war by George W. Bush. And if this guy killed somebody, I mean, you know, maybe he was like, you know, some kind of psychopath who just loves to kill people, in which case he should be in jail for a lot more than 1 year. Or maybe he was temporarily insane as a consequence of the situation, in which case I think George Bush should be on trial along with him. And so, you know, I'm always reluctant to second guess a jury, frankly, even a military jury.
But carrying it one step further, there's the emotion, revenge. And revenge plays in a very important part in the Middle East.
Well, yeah, and if you're a soldier and you've seen a couple of your buddies killed, and you've been trained to kill, and you're there, and you get congratulated and rewarded when you kill under some circumstances, and then you kill under another circumstance, you know, is it the same kind of crime as if you just went out and took a shotgun and killed your neighbor, you know, in your nice middle class neighborhood? I don't think it's the same kind of crime, frankly. And I'm not justifying this guy, and I'm not saying he shouldn't have gotten 20 years instead of 1 year, because I don't know anything about the circumstances of the case. What I am saying is this war was wrong. George W. Bush has put these kids in hell. He has put them in absolute hell, and he's the one that we should be talking about holding accountable, number one. And, you know, I think it's great if we're prosecuting war criminals that we do so. But the biggest war criminal, in my opinion, is in the White House right now. And that's there's not enough discussion about that.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers in their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. Supreme Court has handed a victory to low-wage workers. It refused to hear an appeal of a San Francisco U.S. court decision upholding Berkeley, California's living wage ordinance. Skates on the Bay, a non-union waterfront restaurant in Berkeley's marina, had challenged an extension of that law. Berkeley City Attorney Manuela Albuquerque says this is important for other cities around the nation that want to enact similar living wage ordinances.
The Ninth Circuit decision, which the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear, was a very thoughtful, scholarly opinion, and it established that social welfare legislation of this sort is to be treated with a great deal of deference in the courts.
The U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco said in its ruling that the city was entitled to extend its living wage ordinance to a particular area in order to ensure decent living standards for workers. Albuquerque says that's a win for labor.
Oh, absolutely, because it's protective labor legislation that we enacted for the benefit of workers.
More than 100 cities nationwide now have living wage ordinances.
The National Union for Boxers is asking President George W. Bush to grant a full pardon to the first black heavyweight champion of the world, Jack Johnson. The Joint Association of Boxers is asking for the pardon in recognition of both Martin Luther King Day and out of respect for the first African-American athlete to break through the color barrier. Johnson, who passed away in 1946, held the title from 1908 to 1915. During the time he defended his title, he battled many so-called great white hopes. One such victory over James J. Jeffries sparked race riots and led to some states banning the filming of his victories over white fighters. In 1912, Johnson was arrested for transporting his white fiancée across state lines under a law originally intended to combat prostitution. He was eventually sentenced to a year in prison, but fled the United States and continued fighting in other parts of the world. Eventually, he returned to the United States and served out his sentence. Many feel Johnson was convicted solely on prejudice, and the Boxers Union is seeking exoneration of the charges. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Want to know if your job is going to be cut? A recent survey of human resource executives reveals that the decision to cut a position is not as arbitrary as some may think. Tenure and job title are the prime factors in job cuts. However, 36% of companies do consider performance when looking to make that slice. The survey, conducted by the firm Lee Hecht Harrison, also says that 29% consider employees' skills.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Walk that walk. Talk that talk. Walk that walk. Talk that talk.
Yeah, we can do that. We can do that. We definitely can do that. Walk the walk and talk. Unfortunately, the cons can't. They've got to convince us that they have to destroy Social Security in order to save it, that they have to destroy Medicare in order to save it, that they have to destroy our public schools in order to save them. Come on. They tried to convince us that we should destroy Vietnam to save it, and now they're trying to convince us we have to destroy Iraq to save it. I'm sorry. It doesn't make sense to me. The feds are going to be jamming cell phones in Washington, D.C. during the coronation. If you're a performer, you can't look at the president. I mean, it's getting weird. And this is it wouldn't be Oedipus Rex. What would Georgius Rex? Bushus Rex? I don't know. We need to come up with a Latin name for it, so make it clear. But anyhow, the conservatives now are starting to get down on George. We'll get back to that in just a minute. Let's go back to the phone lines. Our telephone number, if you'd like to call in, any topic you'd like, really, Friday afternoon here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Alice in Humboldt County, California, is on the line and has been patiently waiting. Thank you so much, Alice. Welcome to the program.
Yeah. Well, Tom, you said it. They could win without crooked voting machines, and they still have the machines and no plans for giving them up.
Yeah. Well, I think what Barbara Boxer did and what John Conyers did sensitized, woke up a lot of Americans who thought there was no problem, thank you very much. And I predict that probably the machines are still going to be around for the 2006 election, or what is this? Yeah, 2006 elections. But by 2008, I don't see it. I just don't see it happening. I think there will be some form of electoral reform, Alice.
I'm so grateful for you.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
And Boxer, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Barbara Boxer deserves the Medal of Freedom, not Wolfie or Rummy or what's his name? Bremer. And I mean, it's just, I guess Wolfie didn't get it. It was Bremer and Rumsfeld and.
Yeah. They're a bad bunch.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Okay. Alice, thank you so much for the call, and thank you for your kind words.
And good luck now.
Thank you, and you too. You too. And tag, you're it. Keep spreading the good word there in Humboldt County, California.
Okay.
And keep listening there on KGOE, I believe. By the way, KGOE is now carrying the third hour of our program. Thanks a lot, Tom Seaborn, program director. So pleased to have you all with us there in Northern California, also on the program for our third hour here today. Well, it wasn't just the Heritage Foundation that has decided to take on George W. Bush. It is also John McCain. John McCain has come out and in public said he has no confidence in Rumsfeld. Yesterday on Chris Matthews' show, there was Chuck Hagel. Most of our regular listeners know I have a small problem with Chuck Hagel. He talks a good talk as a moderate Republican. But he was the president of the company that's now ES&S, the voting machine company. Before that, he worked for Bush Sr. He was recruited, brought out to Nebraska, made president of this company. As the head of the company, he sold the voting machines to the state of Nebraska, got the entire state covered with voting machines, and then ran for election. And according to Charlie Matulka, the guy that Hagel ran against in the last election, the Democrat, who has been on this program, and who is still talking about this, Charlie called me last weekend. He says, it wasn't right. He's been trying to sue Mr. Hagel, Senator Hagel, for rigging an election. But I just find it, I'm not saying that Chuck Hagel rigged the election. I'm not saying that, but I am saying that he tried to conceal his ownership in the election company. He was outed about this by the folks on the Hill, the publication The Hill. When his staff found out he was going to be outed, they went over and threatened the reporter. I mean, this has all been reported. He ran for election for the United States Senate and won districts that had never before voted Republican. First time in a generation, two generations, that a Republican had won. And he was running against a very popular incumbent Democrat, incumbent governor. But even Chuck Hagel, the guy that I'm suspicious of, so there's a couple senators who I will openly question their legitimacy. Hagel is one of them. The other, of course, is the esteemed senator from Georgia who took Max Cleland's seat and therefore will remain unnamed for the moment. I don't even want to speak his name. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Brian in New Jersey on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I'm at work, so I'll make this real quick and then I'll get off. Do you know if it's true? My mom had asked me this morning. Are the tsunami victims not taking relief from Israel? And also, does the Red Cross not help Israel? Those are the two questions that I had, and I'll let you answer that. Thanks.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for the call, Brian. In answer to your first question, I believe that there are some nations that have said to Israel, thanks but no thanks, and these are mostly Islamic countries. I'm pretty sure that Indonesia was one of them. The second question, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, frankly. Sorry. I'm not an expert on that. I haven't. Perhaps somebody who does know can call and give you the answer, Brian. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. If somebody calls in with the answer to that, Ira, put them through. The neoconservative hour may be coming to an end in the Bush era. Reason? The cakewalk war they plotted long before 9/11, on which their dreams of Middle East empire and reputations hang, has gone awry. Now, I am reading here to you right now. I am quoting from somebody else's words. I'm just going to read you a little bit more of this and let you wonder who might this be who would say this. The neoconservative hour may be coming to an end in the Bush era. Reason, the cakewalk war they plotted long before 9/11, on which their dreams of Middle East empire and reputations hang, has gone awry. This author continues. This is somebody whose name you will immediately recognize. President Bush now approaches the crossroads LBJ reached in December of 1967. This is so true. I got to tell you, this is so true. Then, this was December of 1967, that's when William Westmoreland, the general who was in charge of Vietnam, came to LBJ and said, okay, you've got 500,000 troops on the ground, 500,000. If you want to win this war, you're going to have to give me another 200,000. I remember the year well. I became eligible for the draft just months later. LBJ said no. And then came the Tet Offensive, and the presidency of Lyndon Johnson was broken. I'm back to reading again, quoting, Bush is nearing his Tet moment, says this writer. After the January 30 elections, he will have three options. Persevere in a no-win war with 150,000 U.S. troops bleeding indefinitely until America turns on him, his policy, and his party. Option one. Option two. Send in tens of thousands of fresh U.S. troops to crush the insurgency as we undertake a years-long program of training Iraqis to defend their own democracy. Or third, find an honorable exit and leave Iraq to the Iraqis. The success or failure of the Bush presidency will likely hang on this decision, for which he can thank the neoconservatives. Written by Patrick J. Buchanan. Now, first of all, Buchanan is absolutely right. And the only reasonable course right now for Bush is to get us to get as many of our troops out of there as quickly as possible, to stop building 14 permanent bases in Iraq, which makes it look like we're occupying, to stop selling the oil exclusively to American oil companies, to suspend the provisions of the Iraqi constitution, which we imposed on them, which gave them a flat 15% tax, so millionaires pay the same taxes as people who can barely feed their families, to suspend the provisions of the constitution, which allowed foreign companies to come in and buy up local companies and expatriate, take 100% of the profits and the revenues out of the country, and just, you know, walk away with it, basically to strip mine Iraq of its people, of its labor, of its resources, to repeal those neoconservative conservative provisions of the Iraqi constitution, and to undo the ban on labor unions that the Bremer Bush folks put into the constitution. And then just get out, because we have become the problem, not the solution. We have become such an irritant that every day that we're there, we're making the situation worse, not better. We have gone from thinking that we were stopping terrorism to being the cause of terrorism. The CIA just issued a report. It was in the news yesterday. By the year 2020, what, 16 years down the road, 15 years down the road, we're going to see more and more random acts of terror. Why? Because of what we're doing right now. We are creating terrorism in Iraq. Iraq has gone from being a place, I mean, originally Saddam and the folks of Al-Qaeda hated each other. Now here's the story from today's Washington Post, Anna Priest. Iraq has replaced Afghanistan as the training ground for the next generation of professionalized terrorists, according to a report released yesterday by the National Intelligence Council, the CIA director's think tank. President Bush has frequently described this by Dana Priest, in the Washington Post yesterday. President Bush has frequently described the war in Iraq as an integral part of U.S. efforts to combat terrorism, but the council's report suggests the conflict has also helped the terrorists by creating a haven for them in the chaos of war. NIC Chairman Robert L. Hutchins said, "At the moment, Iraq is a magnet for international terrorist activity. Before the U.S. invasion, the CIA said Saddam Hussein had only circumstantial ties with several al-Qaeda members. Osama bin Laden rejected the idea of forming an alliance with Hussein and viewed him as an enemy of the jihadist movement because the Iraqi leader, Hussein, rejected radical Islamic ideals and ran a secular government. Yes, under Saddam Hussein, women did not have to wear the veil, and they could go to school, and that made Osama bin Laden crazy." Bush described the war, again reading from today's Washington Post, Bush described the war in Iraq as a means to promote democracy in the Middle East. "A free Iraq can be a source of hope for all the Middle East," he said 1 month before the invasion. "Instead of threatening its neighbors and harboring terrorists, Iraq can be an example of progress and prosperity in a region that needs both." Lord save us from people with good intentions, particularly those whose last name is Bush. Whether it was financing Hitler during World War II, or heading up the CIA and the Republican National Committee, or being President of the United States, mounting trade deficit. Let me just. It seems like a shifting of gears. In many ways, it's not. We have this enormous deficit, budget deficit, and debt within the United States. We also have a huge trade deficit. And the trade deficit is creating problems. This is, I mean, these twin deficits. It's sort of like the dilemma that many middle-class Americans and working people are finding themselves in, where they are absolutely maxed out on their homes. That is, they owe as much as their home is worth, and perhaps more if housing values go down, which they will as interest rates go up. So they're in debt up to their eyebrows with their homes, and they have $20,000, $30,000 of credit card debt. The average American is somewhere between $7,000 and $9,000 in credit card debt, depending on whose numbers you're using. Credit card debt, home debt, you look at these two together, this is a prescription for fiscal disaster. And the smallest little thing will knock it over. Somebody gets sick, they can't work, they lose their job, they get laid off, their job goes overseas, and boom. You want to see the classic documentary on this? Rent Roger and Me by Michael Moore, his first movie, about what happened to Flint, Michigan, when General Motors decided to close their factories in Flint and open them in Mexico. Well, we have that same problem now here in the United States with the twin trade deficit and internal deficit. And China is helping us with both. Isn't that kind of them? They are selling us more than we are, than they will buy from us. They actually protect their domestic markets. We don't. You can thank Ronald Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, and George W. Bush for that.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. We don't protect our domestic markets, like much of the rest of the world does, the rational world. And with all that surplus that they're getting from selling us all this junk that we're selling at Walmart, and not just Walmart. I mean, this isn't pick on Walmart day. Walk into just about any store in America now. With all the surplus that they're accumulating, what are they doing? They're buying our IOUs, our debt. So George W. Bush has his $150 billion, $200 billion war in Iraq. He's got to borrow money to have this war. He borrows the money from China, which gets the money from us buying stuff at Walmart, which causes us to export our jobs to China. Who ends up ruling the world? Not the United States. Now, the Chinese are talking about the Chinese century, and they are dead serious. George W. Bush is giving away our country. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor.
Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxin Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Right here.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour. The trade deficit reaches Grand Canyon levels. The Associated Press reporting today an article by Martin Krutzinger. The U.S. trade deficit hit an all-time high of $60.3 billion in November as American appetites for foreign oil and even imported food reached record levels. The Bush administration. Now, here's what does George Bush do whenever he gets in trouble? He blames it on somebody else, right? 100% of the time. Nothing is ever his fault. I mean, this is a pattern that, you know, obviously has been played out his whole entire life. Blame it on somebody else, shift the blame, and ask somebody else to fix it, right? You know, when he got in trouble when he was in college, his daddy bailed him out. When he couldn't get into college, his daddy made a donation and bailed him out. When he was going to get drafted, his daddy made a phone call and got him into the Texas Air National Guard. When he didn't When he had to do the drug tests, he didn't show up. His commander got upset with him. His daddy gets him transferred down to Alabama. He doesn't show up there for a year. It's always, hey, let's get somebody else to take care of this problem. So here we have this story in the Associated Press. I just had to read you the first two paragraphs. The first paragraph I've already shared with you, it bears repeating. The U.S. trade deficit hit an all-time high of $60.3 billion in November as American appetites for foreign oil and even imported food reached record levels. Second paragraph, the Bush administration urged other countries to help fix the problem. It's the Bush. Yes, other countries, please help. Restrain us. Stop us from spending $200 billion in Iraq. Stop us from buying things at Walmart, please. Stop us from destroying our economy with conservative economic policies. It's so important. As Joel Neroff, head of Holland, the Holland, Pennsylvania forecasting firm, pointed out, we now have the Grand Canyon of trade deficits. Actually, deficit, he says, is a misnomer. It's really a chasm, a gorge, a black hole, an infinitely deep well. They all fit the description better. Now, President Bush's trade policy is working. I'll let you decide. Thanks so much for being with us all this week. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Joe, great to see you there. I hope you do well in the military and the Marine Corps, and wish you well and Godspeed and safe travels. Seriously. Thanks to Louise for producing our program. Thanks to Ira for engineering it. Thanks to Brad for our music, and Ben and I and Shelby and all of the radio stations that are carrying. Thank you all. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at
pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.